welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions, so give us a call right here in our studio. The number is 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. If you prefer to email us your questions, you may do so by visiting the show's website, condocrazeandhoas.com, and by clicking on the email the show tab.
And even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars. We'll talk about that. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page. You can link to our brand new HOA and condo blog. And by the way, the website for that is www.hoa-condoblog.com. You can join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements about the show. And of course, if you would like to call Glazer & Associates directly, which is our law firm, and call us off the air, you can do so at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, that's 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And the website address for Glazer & Associates is www.condo-laws.com. I got to tell you guys, I'm exhausted. What a week it's been to Jacksonville and back. So if I fall asleep at the mic today, please just nudge me, scream at me. But I really want to start off today by saying what an absolutely great time, really, my office had, all of us had, at the PM Expo in Jacksonville. We had a great turnout for the board certification course, and at 8 o'clock in the morning, no less. And let me tell you, it is so incredibly flattering when people in Jacksonville tell us that they listen to the show each week on the internet or on their smartphones. And because of that, I think next week we're going to make a little announcement about Jacksonville on the show.
Oh,
but we'll
nice.
Save it for next week.
And there's another seminar coming up next week, too?
Yes, there is. That's right, Karen. On Saturday, this coming Saturday, everybody, May 26th, we're going to be teaching the course in Orlando, this time at the Holiday Inn at Universal Studios. And so far, so good. It looks like we're going to have a great turnout there as well. And we went a little crazy with the food this time, too. There's going to be a nice, lavish buffet breakfast for everybody that attends, and a bunch of our sponsors are expected to be there too, so it should be really a lot of fun.
Yeah, so if your board's actually interested in getting certified, or your condo just needs a law office to talk to, why don't you come down and give us a call at Glazer & Associates. Come out and see Eric do his thing up in Orlando, and give us a call at the office at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and we can make arrangements to bring the course to you if you can't make it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Scott, our client, the Atlantic Ocean Club condominium, is gracious enough to host another board certification for us on June 7th, and they agreed to open it up to board members who serve on a board in any condo on the Galt Ocean Mile in Fort Lauderdale. So I really want to say thank you again to the Atlantic Ocean Club condominium. And if you want to register again for the seminar in Orlando, just visit the show's website at www.condocrazeandhoas.com. Fill out the form, and Brian, our office manager, will confirm your seat.
All right. Well, last show, we had another esteemed guest, Palm Beach County Clerk of Court and Comptroller Sharon Bach. And she certainly pulled no punches, talking about the sad state of affairs in our court system and how the clerk's offices are going through terrible budget cuts, which is just killing the ability to help get these foreclosure cases to the finish line.
Yeah, thanks again. What two great guests we had 2 weeks in a row. We had Lori Parrish and then Sharon Bach. And thanks again to Sharon Bach for being a guest on the show. And she, like you said, Karen, certainly painted a grim picture of just how difficult it is to keep these cases moving through the system with staff and funding being cut simultaneously. And although she maybe wasn't as direct as Broward property appraiser Lori Parrish was, she too seemed to have a bone to pick with the banks and the way the foreclosure cases have basically brought our court system to a halt. But how about we do this? Let's take Lenore from West Palm Beach.
Hi, Lenore.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
How are you?
I'm fine. My question is, my association is getting ready to assess us $7,500 for our roofs. There are several of us in here that do not have the money. The board has told us that they were foreclosed on our property and put us out. Is that possible?
Is it possible? Yes, it's not only possible, it's perhaps probable. Let me ask you a question, and this comes up every single time at the board certification course. Do you know if your community has waived reserves, or do you fund a reserve account each month?
No, we fund a reserve. We just do not have enough.
You just don't have enough.
No, they're short. Okay, and how in the world can they foreclose? I thought only the people that held your mortgage could do that.
No, see, it's such a sometimes misconception. A lot of times people that don't pay their assessments don't realize that if you don't pay a validly passed assessment, the condominium association has the right, or your homeowners association has a right for that matter, to file a lien on your unit. And if you don't pay that lien, they have a right to file a foreclosure proceeding just like a bank would. Now, you know, if you can, try to work something out with them in advance. I can tell you, you know, we recommend that to our clients all the time. The idea is not to kick people out, but to see if, obviously, you can work with them. Perhaps if it's a problem for a lot of people in the community, instead of assessing everybody all at once, sometimes the associations go out and get a loan and borrow the money from a bank, and then the loan gets paid back over a period of time, and therefore not everybody has to come out of pocket with a big amount of money all at once. But it's a great phone call because it does put a lot of people on notice, especially when the hurricane season is coming up, that these things can happen to you. Just to go off the topic one second, Lenore, as a matter of fact, what we teach at the seminar is the fact that, and I know your community does have reserve accounts, but a lot of communities waive reserve accounts, and in those communities that waive reserves, obviously these type of problems like you're having are much more common. So what the legislature did a couple of years ago, they passed a law that said if you're going to waive reserve accounts and there's going to be a proxy form for people to fill out, they actually make the proxy forms have language in there that says by waiving your reserves, you are acknowledging that you may get hit with large special assessments. So, again, you know, a warning to everybody out there. If you
well, they've already been told that they can't get the loan. It's because it'll be over $1 million.
Well,
so how much time do you have? They file a lien. I thought years ago when they filed the lien that they could collect only when you sold your property.
Absolutely not. They can foreclose on you if you don't pay. But if your association, you know, may want a recommendation in terms of a bank to go to, a bank to talk to, let them give us a call, and perhaps we can point them in the right direction, because it is not uncommon for associations to borrow money. It's done all the time. The only way that a bank, quite frankly, is nervous about lending money in that regard is if your community is overrun by foreclosures, if you're just, you know, at a 30-40% type of level. But if you're, you know, 15% or less, there's a great chance that a bank will loan you money. Okay?
Is there any chance to come see a lawyer and see if they can slow this down?
Give us a call. Have you or your board give us a call at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze, and we'd love to help you out. We don't want to see anybody lose their home. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, on that note, and you've got it, Lenore. How about we go to Dennis in Pompano?
Oh, hello, Karen, Eric, Scott. Before I say anything, I'm on the condo board. As a new member, though I've served on previous boards before, I had a chance to attend your course. I think it was April 5th in the Seminole. And I actually know our documents reasonably well and read the condo laws. And I would tell everybody, whether you think you're smart or not, go to one. I was absolutely amazed in 3 hours on what you guys put out.
Thank you, Dennis. That's much appreciated. Do you think, obviously, it should be mandated for board members to attend?
Oh, I really do. I think you can read this stuff, but you really can't until you hear the insight. Hard to believe in 3 hours you could put that much information out, but to get a perspective on how to really run the association. I've always a lot of questions, but I learned a lot, and I'm pretty much up to
it. Thank you. Hey, let me ask you one more question in that regard. As someone that actually attended a course and feels that they got something out of it, can you believe that you can get certified just like you did simply by signing an affidavit that basically says you know it all? I mean, isn't it insulting
to really.
Someone?
It is kind of insulting. You know, I signed it before going to the course because it was in March, but there's just no way. Well, you don't know if they've even read it.
Right, of course, exactly. Exactly. How can we help you, Dennis? I appreciate that.
Oh, I actually was from the course. I'm on the board, and I have a question about assessments. In our bylaws, we basically can assess for something, I guess, you don't need by a 75% vote. And the other way we have to do that, Eric, is by it says a 50% vote, and that says emergencies only. However, we have an insurance shortfall coming up in October, about $85,000 because of the budget increase, and we need to paint the building. It's actually kind of past, but it's been 8 years. We have leaks. But I continually, when I talked to the president, I said, some of us felt that really, I understood there were certain, I think you gentlemen said there, and I've heard from other places, certain items you have to run that you really don't need to have the voting of the union orders to do, like insurances or if a roof is having a problem. Is that basically
okay,
true or not true? Because I asked him, I said, what if it fails? We have to do the
okay,
project.
Bottom line, okay? The board has an obligation to come up with a budget each year that pays the bills, no matter what those bills are. We actually have a slide, that, if you recall, Dennis, during the presentation that we actually ask you, can the budget increase by more than 115% every year? And a lot of people raise their hand and say, yes, there's a limit. There is no limit. There's no limit in terms of how much the budget goes up. The board has an obligation to make sure that the bills get paid, period. There's nothing ambiguous about that statement, right? The bills have to get paid. And if, especially if you're in a situation where now, you know, the roof is leaking, you have an obligation to fix that roof. End of story. And if you don't have the money in the bank to fix it, you have an obligation to pass a special assessment to fix it. If you don't, I can tell you, if you don't do it, and we teach this as well, and someone gets hurt as a result of not fixing that roof, potentially even a board can get hit with individual liability for board members, because there's a section of the statute that said board members can face personal liability if they act with willful disregard for human rights or safety. So you got to be real careful. You know, make sure if something has to get fixed, it gets fixed. Regardless of whether or not the money is there, not having the money is never an excuse.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you got it, Dennis.
You know, every time you ask that question at the seminar,
yes,
I always get it right.
Yeah. Well, you've been there like 21 times there now, yeah. Scotty. You better
Me
get
too.
It right by now. Exactly. All right, let's do this. Let's take our first break. And when we get back, we're going to cover a topic that I really wanted to cover last week, but we kind of ran out of time. And that is, what does it mean to be a family in a condominium? The answer may surprise you, and it may determine who can and who can't live in your condo, believe it or not. We'll also talk about short sales. We'll talk about allegations that the banks are destroying communities by failing to repair properties they own. And, of course, we'll take all your calls and questions about anything having to do with condos or HOAs. Just give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. As a matter of fact, Margo from Miami, we see you there, but we will be back right after this.
Back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, again here with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The number to call if you have a question is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and you want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email. And let's go to Margo in Miami, who's been holding on the line. Thanks for holding, Margo.
Hi there. Eric, I was walking down my hallway a couple of days ago, and I noticed a sign on one of the unit doors that our association had foreclosed on that unit. Doesn't that have to be discussed at a board meeting before they do that?
Does it have to be discussed to actually foreclose on a unit? I would think that's that's a strategy that can probably be spoken about between the board and board's counsel at a closed-door meeting. There are certain provisions under the law, very few exceptions, where boards are allowed to meet with their attorney in private. One of them is to discuss pending litigation. So it's possible, again, that was discussed at one of those, you know, private board meetings. That absolutely is possible, and it would be allowable under the law. So it's not surprising that you found out about it, you know, after the fact.
Oh, and they don't even have to announce that they met with the attorney on that subject matter?
When you have a closed-door meeting with your attorney, what should happen is there should be an agenda prepared, but it should say on the agenda that it's a closed-door attorney-client privileged meeting.
Okay? But do they have to announce that,
that they
had that meeting?
They need to post it. They need to yeah, absolutely. They need to post it, just like they would post any other meeting, but they should note on there that it's not open to unit owners to attend because it's a closed-door attorney-client privileged meeting because they're going to discuss, you know, pending litigation matters.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Thank you very much.
All right, Margo, thank you. All right, before we actually continue on the foreclosure front and on the banking front, let's mention really a bad story involving a condo manager at an Aventura condo. Last week, the former manager of Atlantic 2 condominium was sentenced to 2 years in prison for stealing about $500,000 from the community.
Boy,
bad case.
That's real money.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Catherine Fernandez Rundle, the Miami-Dade County State Attorney, says that, sadly, this trusted condo employee started using the association's monies as her personal piggy bank. It's truly appalling that the very person hired to help the condo owners make ends meet instead stole the money needed to help their condo stay running.
And how does something like this really happen? I mean, we're not talking about a case here where the office manager stole some petty cash. We're talking about $500,000.
Yeah, let me tell you this, and I've had actually a lot of experience with these types of cases. It happens perhaps more often than you think, but in my experience it generally happens in communities where the manager, let's say, works there for a long period of time. The manager kind of like built up a tremendous amount of trust, and in communities that are generally older in terms of the age of the residents, and the managers really aren't questioned enough. They're not met with enough by the board, and perhaps the accountants actually could have caught this as well. You know, I don't know, but it would be interesting for me to know if the association members actually waive their requirement to do an audit for those years that are in question, because if there was a full-blown audit, I would think it would have been caught. But I agree, Scott, $500,000 is a lot of money, and it probably should have been caught somewhere along the line.
Have you ever personally been involved in a case where the manager or board member got caught for stealing association funds?
Yeah, absolutely, Karen. And interestingly enough, I don't know why. It's kind of weird. Maybe someone can call in and tell me, you know, what they think from a psychological perspective. But almost all of the cases involve that, at least the ones that I've been involved in, and this one too in Atlantic, involves a female manager or a female board member that actually gets caught stealing the funds. Males that get caught, generally they ask for like payoffs or for awarding contracts, mm-hmm. and they get caught taking big money in one shot. Women apparently have patience, I don't know why, and they have no problem. They take little bits of money over a long period of time. They got a lot more patience than their male counterparts.
I
don't know. Someone can tell me why it works out that way. But that's the situations that I found. Men like to take the payoffs in one shot. Women, over periods of time, you don't even realize that it's happening to you.
Yeah.
That's generally what happens.
And everybody's worrying about the condo. For those of you that are concerned, yes, the association may have employee theft coverage and can report this crime to their insurance carrier. But because of the large amount involved here, they certainly may not have enough insurance to get everything back that this lady took.
Yeah, no two ways about it. All right, let's get back for a moment and discuss what Clerk Bach said last week about whether or not she thinks this foreclosure crisis is going to slow down anytime soon.
Yeah, Eric. She spoke about the fact that her office is experiencing a dramatic sudden increase in the number of new foreclosure filings because the banks no longer have that self-imposed, moratorium that they had like about a year or two ago. In fact, the Sun Sentinel reported this week that South Florida still leads the nation in distressed mortgages, which they say will mean a lengthy recovery period.
And believe it or not, according to that article, nearly a quarter of all mortgages in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach are at least 90 days past due or are already in foreclosure. And South Florida has led the nation in the share of distressed homes for the past 7 quarters.
Isn't that wild? Isn't that crazy numbers? But it's definitely an interesting scenario out there. The banks already own a lot of properties that they need to unload, hundreds of thousands of units. But they're thinking if they continue with the foreclosures, I guess, if they flood the market with thousands of more foreclosed homes that they need to sell, well, they fear that that's going to drive down prices a lot further. So perhaps that's part of the reason that they're slowing down a little bit.
It's a possibility. In fact, according to the Miami Herald and the Palm Beach Post, the bottom has already fallen out of the real estate market, and prices are actually up 1.1% over the same time last year. And I guess, believe it or not, apparently prices in condos are rising quicker than they are in actual single-family homes.
In fact, apparently sellers may have the upper hand and are even demanding that they get to live in the home after they sell it in order to move to times that were more convenient for them and their kids.
Yeah, go figure. It's actually a seller's market, they say. And it's pretty funny because, you know, I spend a lot of time when preparing for the show reading all kinds of articles and papers, and, you know, there's differing opinions all the time in the newspapers about the state of our real estate market here in South Florida. And oftentimes you get conflicting opinions on the same day, even in the same newspaper, believe it or not. But there's another interesting article in the Sun Sentinel that says despite so many people losing their homes to foreclosure, these same people who lost their homes, they're the ones that are now finding ways to buy homes all over again.
Yeah, and the article makes mention that most of the people who lost their home in foreclosure aren't ashamed of what happened because they realize that it happened to millions of other people and that now to escape rising rents that they really take advantage of the home prices, which are down by about a third since 2006.
I hear that background music. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. We are taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer, Scott Shapiro. We're taking your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. A couple of calls on the line now. Kevin from Margate, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, attorneys. I'm Young Lee.
How are you, Kevin?
I have a question for you. Yeah. Good morning, sir.
Let's hear it.
Question for you. If we were to an association, I went through my bylaws, okay, and I was looking at my association, and there's nothing in my association state that if they need to spend X amount of dollars, they have to get a vote on it. I remember a couple weeks ago you were really talking about if the association need to spend an extensive amount of money, they need to get a vote on the owners.
Right, and your documents say nothing. Okay, let me touch on that a little bit. Sometimes you'll have in governing documents a provision in there that puts a limit on the amount of money that the boards have to can spend without a unit owner vote, but generally that applies to what's called capital improvements. For example, if you want to do like a major landscaping project, if you want to do something like renovate the lobby with new furniture and things like that, that's separate, apart, and distinct from a board's obligation to fix things like the roof and the electrical system that may be broken. There is no dollar limit. There is no cap on something like that. I don't care what your documents say. If something in your community breaks and the roof needs repair or whatever it is, if it needs to be fixed, the board must get that thing fixed, regardless of the cost.
Okay.
Regardless of anything that's contained in your documents. There can be no cap. You know, your roof needs fixing for $100,000. Don't tell me about a cap in your documents that limits what you can spend to $25,000. Your board has an obligation to make that fix.
But let me ask you this. What about landscaping, something like planting of new palm trees? Multiple threes. How about that?
I don't even believe that would probably be considered a capital improvement. If you have dead, dying grass and it was always there to begin with, yes, your board has an obligation to replace that too. Your board not only has an obligation to make sure the community is safe, but that it aesthetically looks good as well, and it looks like it was designed to look.
Okay. There's no way they don't need to come to a vote for the implementation of plant a new palm
tree? No, I don't believe so as well. If all of the landscape in the community has died off, yeah, I think your board is under an obligation to put it back and make the community look good. Absolutely.
Final question.
Yes.
Can a president time is indefinite? He can just stay there, run all these years, no problem?
Are there term limits? That's what you're asking me. No, there are no term limits for being a member of the board. You can run each and every year, and if you keep getting elected, you get to stay. Okay?
Okay.
Sorry, Democratic.
All right. How about we go to Percy in Miami Lakes?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
How are you, Percy?
Pretty good. Here's my situation. I own a condo in Miramar. It's on a second floor, and unfortunately, it's infested with termites. Mm. The floor is wood, so that's a big problem, obviously, with termites. I'm trying to get the association to see if we can tent the whole building. I've had several people go out there and say that the only way to really control it is by doing the whole building. There's about, I'd say, about 6 or 7 units in that particular building. Question, are they legally obliged to do this?
Is the association legally obliged to pay for the termite repair that needs to be done in your unit?
Well, not necessarily the termite repair, but just to stop the problem, the infestation.
To get it
under control.
Yeah, I guess since, Scott, maybe you want to chime in on this, I would think it would depend what an expert would tell them. In other words, if the board finds out that to just do your unit and take care of the termite problem in your unit would be a complete, total waste of time because the termites are simply going to move to another unit, I would say, yeah, the board should certainly, obviously, look into the fact that they should do the building at the whole, at one shot. As a matter of fact, if I'm your neighbor and the board knows that by you just taking care of your unit, they're going to move to your neighboring unit, I'd be pretty upset if the board doesn't do something about it now and the termites wind up in my living room. So, yeah, the board would certainly be given some business judgment latitude in that regard, but not if they don't have a differing opinion that says it's okay to ignore it now. I think they're probably under an obligation to do something about it right now if just allowing you to do something in your unit is not going to solve the problem and is only going
to
make it worse.
Sounds
good to
me.
Yeah, I had a couple of companies out there that have gone, and they actually treated it, but obviously it hasn't worked. And they've said that the only real way to get this under control is to tent the whole building. And they've actually paid for that. Actually, they reimbursed me for that cost. So,
well, again, when you say there's 7 units, so they may have to pay it times 7 or whatever the cost may be to make sure that this does not spread. Let's put it this way: they certainly have an obligation. Let me just say this: they certainly have an obligation to make sure it doesn't spread throughout the building.
Right, they do have an obligation. Are they responsible for the actual floor, the wooden floor? Do you know?
The only way that they would be responsible for the floor in your unit is you would somehow need to be able to prove that the negligence of the board somehow created that termite condition in your unit, and I think that's going to be difficult to prove.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that your condo deck says that your unit starts at the unfinished floor.
Yeah, right.
We don't know what your documents say, so we don't know what their response. Yeah, that would be in the documents.
This condo was established, because there are different rules, I think, right, depending on when it was created?
Yeah, correct.
Also, this one was established in 2006.
Yeah, so we'd perhaps need to see your documents, but again, getting liability of the association to fix your floor could be tough, but thanks for the call, Percy.
Thanks,
on that note, we got to go to Sarah in Pompano. How are you, Sarah?
Yes, I have a question to ask the gentleman.
There's two gentlemen
in my
here.
Book of rules
well,
and regulations.
Speak for yourself.
No. Right. I'm sorry, Sarah. Go ahead.
In my book of rules and regulations, it says pets must be walked along A1A and curbed away from landscaped areas. Owners shall carry a pooper scooper or other means of removing waste. Owners violating this rule are subject to a Highland Beach citation.
Okay. So that's in your document. So what are you saying?
Now, the problem is this. People are not in my building going by the rules and regulations, including our board members, okay? The president of our board also has his dog going to the bathroom, okay, on our landscape property, okay? Now what they want to do is the people with the dogs in here want to write up a petition, okay, and have the dog owner sign it and tell me that I'm harassing them. I never even talked to the dog owners. I talked to the manager about it.
Okay.
And the manager doesn't do anything about rules and regulations.
Scott is like the preeminent guy on dogs and around here. What do you think, Scott? What can she do? Not much other than write a letter saying, hey, board, you're not following your own rules and regulations.
Well, they know that. They know that because they're doing a lot of illegal things, okay?
Well, you know, you could
actually... They're doing a lot of illegal things. Our manager doesn't even have a manager's license.
Well, that's a problem.
Okay, and he's doing all the electrical and plumbing work in here, and he does not have a plumbing or electrical license.
Okay, let's stop there for a second because, you know, you saved the best part for last, quite frankly. If you're sure about what you just said... that's something that could be
10,000 times correct.
Okay, then that's something that could be reported to your local building official, and your local building official will come out, do an inspection. If he sees this guy, you know, in the middle of some work, he will definitely issue a stop work order and make sure that the association gets licensed and insured personnel to wind up finishing the job. That's serious stuff. You know, that's stuff that could potentially result in serious injury to somebody.
Say this. What if I go to the Highland Beach Police and ask them if this is a true fact that owners violating this rule are subject to a Highland Beach citation?
It might be. You can ask them, but again, I don't know how much time the police department wants to get involved in dog poo. Right, exactly. But on that note, Sarah, thank you very much for the phone call. Looks like we need to take our final break of the hour. We're at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. Finally, we're going to get back to the story we wanted to talk about for the last few weeks about what it means to be a family. Again, we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I am Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer, Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The number to call if you have a question is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right. We actually wanted to talk about this topic on Mother's Day, but we wound up having Sharon Bach as our wonderful guest. But as we know, a day like Mother's Day is all about family, of course. But as time goes on and life becomes more complicated every day, our conceptions about what a family actually is are obviously changing over time, you know, at least for some of us. And I can tell you that the definition under Florida condominium law certainly has gone above and beyond what some of our more conservative listeners may believe a family to be.
Yeah, there's no question about it, Eric. Today, a family is simply not the perfect picture of a mother, father, and two small children, like in a Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah, exactly.
And I believe we even said that on this show a few times, that as the economy and the foreclosure crisis has gotten worse, extended family members have wound up living together as a way to cut down on expenses.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing that a lot now. Again, lots of families moving in together to kind of save money, no question about it. And extended families are actually becoming really our immediate families, and this trend is probably going to continue for a long, long time. But the question for today is, suppose your condominium documents say that you can only use your condo unit or your home as a single family residence. What type of familial relationships are now allowed, really, in the privacy of your own home? And now what relationships are not allowed in the privacy of your own home?
Well, we've seen states trying to define legal families differently and having a tough time defining what a family is. And every presidential administration also seems to have to grapple with what a family is. And you know, that was in the news this week as well. I can tell you that these types of questions have come up a lot in a few years. And then I've been practicing. There's actually a lot of decisions made by arbitrators defining what a family actually is here in Florida. And again, it may not be the same definition as many of our listeners think, but, you know,
it is
there is actually a few Supreme Court cases that matter a lot more.
Right. All right. Let's give some examples of some cases, though, that are decided by arbitrators here in Florida. Scott, start us off.
All right. Well, in 1983, a unit owner allowed his wife's niece to reside in the unit while the unit owner was away. The association argued that the niece was his guest. But the owner said, hey, that's my niece. That's my family member. And she doesn't have to get approved by the board to stay at her uncle's place. Well, the arbitrator held that a single family are people related by blood or marriage living and cooking together as a single family. Since the unit owner did not reside with the nephew, they were guests and not a single family.
With the niece, actually, with the niece, they were. Right, exactly.
That's, kind of contrary to you know, some court decisions.
So in this case, you both have to be related by blood or marriage and must live together at the same time to be considered family. Their own niece had to get out?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they're saying. The niece couldn't stay in the uncle's place without getting approved by the board.
Right. All right. Another arbitration case in 1993. And here the term family now is one of greater flexibility. Two males living together does not violate the provisions of the declaration limiting use as a single family residence. Two guys were living together, sharing expenses, and according to the arbitrator, that alone made them a family under Florida law.
No question that some of our listeners may not see it that way, especially ones that are opposed to same-sex marriages.
Mm, yeah.
Well, here's another one. This one's all the way back in 94 as well. Although an owner considered the person occupying the unit to be like a son to her, the occupant was considered a tenant and not a family member, and therefore the single family residence rule was violated. In this case, he was paying some of the bills too, just like in the other case we just read. So
interesting that two men sharing expenses is a family, but a younger man and older woman sharing expenses is not okay and not a family.
Right. So cougars beware. You cannot have a young guy living with you. Apparently under Florida law, you are not a family.
Well, Eric, we got to let the listeners know that these aren't court decisions. These are arbitrator decisions, and there are a lot of arbitration decisions that simply conflict with each other sometimes.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is the Supreme Court of the United States decided that a family is not exactly what these people are talking about. So I don't know how enforceable these decisions are.
There's no question about it, though. The definition of a family is expanding. Let's talk about another 1994 case. Elderly unit owner's adult daughter and her husband co-occupied the unit and were not tenants or guests under the single family restriction because they all occupied the unit as a single housekeeping unit, even though the unit owners resided in the unit on a seasonal basis while the daughter and the husband resided there year-round. So in this case, the owner didn't even have to live there.
Yeah. Well, you know, in addition to all these cases, you got to keep in mind that since 1994, the definition of the family on both the state and federal level has expanded. And despite what these these arbitration decisions say and what your documents might say, and God knows when they were written, you still have to be careful about kicking people out just because the board thinks they're not a family or not a single housekeeping unit, because you might be violating state or federal laws. And quite frankly, those are much more broader than the things we're reading about right on here today.
Yeah, in any event, whatever your definition of a family is, the three of us again hope you spent Mother's Day with your family and that all moms out there had the best Mother's Day yet. And on that note, how about we take, we have somebody from Davey on the line. Dave, I'm sorry.
Dave from Fort Lauderdale.
I'm sorry. How are you, Dave?
Hold on.
Hello, Dave.
TikTok, Dave. Come on, let's go.
Hello. Sorry about that. Hey, I live in a condo. It's a condo building, and my parking place is under a row of balconies. And I've lived in it for 20 years. Family does own it. My car's been urinated on, gum on it, spit on it. You name it, it's been thrown on it. I mean, I'm sure a lot of stuff's not intentionally, but I mean, urinating on a car.
I take it you're on the board, Dave, right?
No, I'm not on the board.
He didn't get the joke. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, I got you. I was just going to ask him what I can do to. I was on the board at one time. What I can do to get the board to possibly put an awning up?
Because stuff is flying off your balcony, other people's balconies onto your car.
Balcony.
Right. They're flying off other people's balconies, damaging your car. I don't know if the board has an obligation to put up a balcony to protect your car. Perhaps the board has an obligation to make people stop throwing stuff off their balcony.
Yeah, I'm gonna go on a limb and say somebody's probably violating some condo rule by peeing off the balcony.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there is an ordinance about that.
That's a human ordinance.
good thing they didn't have it while I was in college.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, this, for instance, like when the urination was going on, this went on for like 8 months.
Right.
And there was multiple letters sent to the board. Nothing was done until finally one of them parked their cars there and said, hey, I think my car's being peed on.
Right. Okay.
So there's nothing I can do, like no letter I can send.
Has anybody reported this to the police?
It almost got to the point, and that's actually kind of funny. That's when the board decided to do something.
Well, again,
it's letters out, knocked on people's doors.
It's vandalism. It probably should have been reported. Perhaps the board can put up a camera of some kind. But whether or not
DNA,
have at least temporary cameras. But whether or not they have an obligation to put up something to protect your car on the common areas? I don't know about that. I don't think so. And it may even be considered an alteration to the common areas that would require probably a three-quarter unit owner vote. So, again, I'm not so sure, you know.
I mean, let me tell you, if there was a way to get a condo to do something like this, I would. I got a brand new car, but I got this tree that drops all these little things on my car. It gets in the air conditioning and everything, and there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, well, Dave, thanks for the call, and here's hoping to that your upstairs neighbors use the bathroom rather than your car. All right, on that note, everybody, thanks for tuning in to another week of Condo Craze and HOAs. Today's hour flew by.
Sure did.
Scott, I know you're rooting for the Heat today.
Go Heat!
All right, everybody, tune in next week, same time, Condo Craze and HOAs. Be well, everyone.